Welcome back to the Hemming Brainiac-a-thon, the podcast where we do excellent things. We're talking about book one, chapter. What are we doing? Chapter 29, part two. Part two. Here's the schmoop summary. Next thing you know, Since the Marquis has never been able to pay Perard for his support, he leaps at the chance to give 500 francs to the man's top student, Julien Sorel. So that's where the money has come from. Next thing you know, De La Mole offered Perard control of one of the most powerful parishes in Paris. He agrees eventually, but not before writing a letter to the bishop, outlining all the dirty scheming his enemies in the church have done for years. He sends Julien to discover the letter. He knows he's kind of sending Julien to the wolves. Julien still offers the man all the money he has to help him now that he's leaving. When he delivers the letter, he charms the bishop with his knowledge of both religious and secular literature. The two of them have a long discussion, and the bishop is impressed with Julian's knowledge. Then Julien reveals how poorly he did on the exams, and the bishop can't believe it. The bishop gives Julien a book as a gift for his pleasant company. The next day, all the other students are envious of the book. Meanwhile, it comes out that Father Perard has taken a much better job in Paris. This humiliates his rival, Father Frilliere. Apparently, that's what happened in the chapter. I've lost it a little bit because I don't know who all these different, like Frilliere and all these people are. I don't know Frilliere. I don't know Father Frilliere, Father this, Father that. Pretty much if it starts with Father, I'm just like, it's just the church guy. I can't really distinguish them apart. Not to worry. Short one today. We're going to split up chapter 30 into three because it's a freaking long chapter. It's like 16 pages or something like that, or 18. So it's basically, well, this, for the first, 12 or 13 chapters of the book, there were like 3 or 4 pages. So this is like 3, 6, 9, 12, 15. This is about 6 chapters in one. For some reason, the author can't plan his book to be in somewhat equal parts, which, as you know, if you listen to this podcast, is one of my pet peeves. Plan your book, you know, give your reader some rhythm to stick to. We're going to read up until around the noon the next day, so it's going to be a really short reading. It's only about 3 pages that we're going to read. Because it's really hard to find a break in the chapter where it's a good point to pause. So I don't actually read the chapter to find these points. I just look at the sort of, I skim the first line of different paragraphs, looking for one that'll say something like the next day, or, you know, 1 year later, or something like that. A break in the action. And so there's one really early, and then there's a conversation that seems to go for about 10 pages. So tomorrow's one will be this long conversation that they have. So sorry for breaking up the book so much. In a bit of a rush tonight, you might have noticed by my quick intro. Jan Brunt said, "Julien sure does arouse paternal feelings in older people. First the Surgeon Major, then Chelan, now Perard. And what a stroke of luck. Perard just promoted him from student to professor. What I'm getting from this book is that our success and failures in life are not really our own, but rather we're seemingly caught in a web of circumstances that we can occasionally turn to our advantage. Julien's life has been far more shaped and influenced by the petty feuds of more powerful men than by his own merit." All right, that's the only comment that we had. So, let's read. "An Ambitious Man" is the name of chapter 30. There's only one style of nobility left, and that's the title of Duke. Marquise is ridiculous that the word Duke people turn their heads. Edinburgh Review. The Marquis de la Mole received a Perard without any of those little grand seigneurial ways that are so polite, yet so insolent to those who understand them. That would have been to lose time, and the Marquis was too much involved in affairs of state to have time to spare. For the past 6 months he had been intriguing to persuade both the nation and the king to accept a certain ministry, which, in recognition of his efforts, would make him a duke. Year after year, the Marquis had vainly demanded a clear and condensed statement of the progress of his lawsuit in Franche-Comte from his Besançon lawyers, but how could the famous lawyer explain things when he did not understand them himself? The little slip of paper the Abbe handed him explained everything. "My dear Abbe," said the Marquis, having run through all polite formulas and personal solicitations in less than 5 minutes, "my dear Abbe, in the midst of my apparent prosperity, I lack the time to deal adequately with two little things that are none the less rather important, my family and my business concerns. I take care of the fortunes of my house in a broader context, and I can advance them considerably. I take care of my pleasures, and that's what should come first, at least in my eyes," he added, having detected a look of surprise in those of Abbe Pirard. Although a man of experience, Abe was astonished to find an old man talking so openly of his pleasures. "Doubtless there is work done in Paris," continued the noble lord, "but it's done when perched on the fifth floor, and from the moment I approached a man, he takes an apartment on the second, and his wife starts receiving once a week. Consequently, there's no more work done, nothing but attempts to be, or seem to be, a figure in society. That's their sole concern as soon as they have enough bread to eat. To be more specific, for my lawsuits, even for each case taken separately, I have lawyers killing themselves with work. One of them died on me only the day before yesterday, of chest trouble. But as to my affairs in general, would you believe, monsieur, that for the last 3 years I have given up any idea of finding a man who would deign, to think seriously about what he was doing when writing on my behalf. In any case, all this is only by way of a preface. I have high regard for you, and I dare add, though seeing you for the first time, I like you. Would you consent to be my secretary with a salary of 8,000 francs, or quite likely double that? I'd gain by the arrangement, I assure you, and I'd make it my business to hold your fine living for you for the day when we no longer agree." The Abbe declined, but towards the end of their conversation, the guinea plight in which he was the Marquis to be suggested an idea to him. "I've left a poor man buried in my seminary, who, if I'm not mistaken, will be harshly persecuted. If he was nothing but a simple monk, he'd already be in pace? I don't know what that is. Up until now, this young man knows only Latin and Holy Writ, but it's not impossible that one day he will employ his great talents either in preaching or in the direction of a man's soul. I don't know what he will do, but he has the sacred fire. He could go far. I'd plan to give him to our bishop, if only one had ever come to us who had something of your manner of seeing men in affairs." "Where does your young man come from?" inquired the Marquis. "He's said to be the son of a carpenter from our mountains, but I rather think he's the natural son of some rich man. I've seen him receive an anonymous, or pseudo-anonymous, letter, with a letter of exchange for 500 francs. "Ah, it's Julian Sorel," said the Marquis. "How do you know his name?" asked the Abbe, amazed. And as he blushed at the question, the Marquis replied, "That would be telling you." "Well," said the Abbe, "you might try to make him your secretary. He has the energy and the wit. In short, you could try the experiment." "Why not?" said the Marquis. "But is he a man who will let his palm be greased by the prefect of police or someone else to spy in my house? That's my only reservation." After favourable assurances on this from Abbe Pirard, the Marquis produced a 1,000-franc note. "Send this travel permit to Julian Sorel. Get him to come to me." "It's easy to tell you to live in Paris," said Abe. "It's easy to tell that you live in Paris," said Abbe Pirard. "You don't realize the tyranny that presses on us provincials, and especially on those priests who aren't friends of the Jesuits. They wouldn't let Julian Sorel go. They'd know how to cover it up with the cleverest excuses. They'd reply to me that he's ill, that letters got lost in the post, etc., etc. One day soon I'll obtain a letter from the minister to the bishop," replied the Marquis. "I'd forgotten one word of warning," said the Abbe. "Though he's low-born, this young man has a haughty spirit. He will be of no use if this pride is ruffled. You would make him stupid." "That pleases me," said the Marquis. "I'll make him a companion for my son." "What will that do? Will that do?" Sometime after this, Julian received a letter in unknown handwriting, and carrying the Chalon's postmark, he found it on an order on the Besançon dealer and instructions to report to Paris without delay. The letter was signed with an assumed name, but on opening it, Julian had experienced a thrill. A leaf from a tree fluttered to his feet, Sorry. A leaf from a tree fluttered to his feet. It was the sign he had agreed with the Abbé Pirard. Less than an hour afterwards, he was summoned to the bishop's palace, where he found himself welcomed with a truly paternal kindness. Constantly quoting Horace, Monseigneur made him the cleverest compliments on the lofty destiny awaiting him in Paris, compliments which seemed to invite, by way of thanks, some explanation. Julian could say nothing, primarily because he knew nothing, and Monseigneur conceived a great regard for him. One of the bishop's assistant priests wrote to the mayor, and who hurried along in person to bring a passport that had been already signed, but on which the traveller's name had been left blank. Before midnight that evening, Julian was at Fuchs' house. That sage spirit was more surprised than delighted at the future that seemed to await his friend. "It'll end up for you," said this liberal voter, "with a government job that'll oblige you to do something which will be vilified in the press. I'll hear of you through your disgrace. Remember that even financially speaking, it's better to earn 100 louis in the honest wood trade, where one is one's own master, than to receive 4,000 francs from a government, even if it's King Solomon's." Julian saw nothing in this but petty-mindedness of a country merchant. At last, he was to figure on the stage of great events, the happiness of going to Paris, which he imagined to himself as crammed with clever people. Scheming and hypocritical but polite as the Bishop in Besançon and the Bishop of Agde eclipsed all else for him, to his friend he professed himself deprived of the freedom to choose by the Abbé Pirard's letter. Around noon the next day he arrived in Verrières. Alright, that's where we're going to stop. Have your say about that on the subreddit. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.